The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the program today. Every day at this time, I have the opportunity to sit with a guest in our studio, and today I have Dr. Case Thorpe. He is the Senior Associate Pastor of Evangelism at First Presbyterian Orlando, and that's a beautiful church that is led by David Swanson, who's been a regular guest on our program, really dating back to when I first began. And it is just so great to have Dr. Thorpe. Welcome to our program.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate being here.
You know, it is so exciting to get to talk with you. I've met several people now over the course of the last 18 months that are from and work with and love David Swanson. You would be one of those guys.
I'm a big fan.
He's really a unique guy, isn't he?
You know, David is the same up front and out front as he is behind the scenes. And that was something 16 years ago when I came that I wanted to make sure there was some congruency there. And he is certainly, I mean, he's just David.
You know, he's so young looking, and I don't get that. I mean, I would not have dreamed he'd been there as long as he'd been there.
Well, and God bless him. He doesn't dye his hair. He's a good looking man.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, he's a great guy and a good friend and a good friend to this program. And I've spent some, I look to him as one, like a father in the city, really, as a spokesperson.
Sure.
For when major things are happening, big events like Easter. I've had him on my Easter program before. Yeah. And there's just nobody I loved listening to talk about the gospel events any more than David Swanson. Mm-hmm. He's just a great guy, and God bless you for doing it. And you are leading in this area of the church, evangelism. Mm. That's something else that's been near and dear, because that would be one of my job description items when I was a part of a church staff as well. And I love that.
Yeah. Well, we Presbyterians aren't particularly known for our evangelism, rooting back to our theological roots. However, that's just a misnomer. That's a misunderstanding. We absolutely should be and do care for the lost and reaching out. I was taken with the statistics offered by a professor at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary recently, Jim Singleton, who, in looking at the old denominational records, found that Presbyterians from about 1890 to 1920 had more baptisms than Baptist and Methodist.
Hmm.
And believers' baptisms, that is. And so
now, would this be the PCUSA that did that?
Well, those days, probably not there wasn't such the split pea soup that we have now.
And literally pea soup.
Exactly.
Presbyterian soup.
We know how to divide. Yeah. Well, the statistics, though, were sort of a clarion call that we need to reclaim such things. The annual reports back in those days for the denominations that churches turned in had a space for number of adult converts. And then across the mid-20th century, a number of denominations just began to drop that question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good.
Well, you know, the age-old differences between Arminianism and Calvinism and all of the things that people have attributed with Calvinism, which is often the bulwark of the PCUS, the PCA church and other Presbyterian churches, as you called it, the pea soup.
Mm. And by the way, we're EPC,
exactly.
Evangelical Presbyterian Church.
You're different yet. Although I think at one time was it not a PCUSA?
We were PCUSA. And by 2012, after an incredible, faithful 25 years, even before I came to this church, for 25 years, First Pres sought to reform things and keep to biblical standards, but we just got to the point where we were done.
And you know, so often we've heard stories, news stories about major denominations going the direction of progressivism and embracing things like gender issues and homosexuality and leadership. Things like that have divided many churches.
Yeah.
And that unfortunately, is still going on to this day in a lot of movements across the country. But your church, the EPC church, is alive and well and doing really great.
It really is. And we were so welcomed. And after about a year or two of being in the EPC, David and I and the other pastors, we remarked, we didn't know what it felt so weird to be in a place where you looked forward to seeing your peers in ministry. Mm-hmm. I love going to Presbytery meeting, which is kind of not the norm, but there, I mean, when theology's in the can, we can focus on mission and evangelism.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. The EPC actually moved their headquarters here to Orlando in 2015, not because of us, but it's the cheapest place in the country to fly. And it's been great to know and work with a lot of the national leaders.
Well, it's really great to have you here, and especially to get to talk over some of the things that I know are near and dear to your heart, like evangelism. Mm. I think of the Evangelism and the Sovereignty of God book that Packer wrote. Mm. That was one of the just, wow, man, just a groundbreaking thing about this very issue that you talked about, it doesn't matter what your denominational background, we need to be involved in evangelism.
And Packer was a good Calvinist, and yes, evangelism matters.
Yes, it does matter. And I love his I guess you could call it the defense for why the Bible would teach it in light of the belief that you can be secure in your faith and yet be able to share the gospel openly and freely, and that be our call and our duty as believers to get to do that. So,
well, and most folks don't know, Calvin came to his views on election predestination because of his pastor's heart. He preached Sunday in and Sunday out, and he couldn't understand why is it that that individual in that pew is so moved, and yet this individual has been here week after week after week and seemingly bears no fruit, does not confess faith. And he couldn't intellectually figure that out. And so his theology led him in that direction of predestination election. But I grew up a United Methodist, and so I've known both worlds and both camps. In fact, last week was at old Southern camp meeting up in Georgia with all my Methodist friends.
Wow. You have been on both sides of the camp, as they say. Yeah, that's great. So tell us a little bit about that. Were your parents believers?
My parents were yes and no. So I was raised as a cultural Christian. My Southern Baptist mother was raised in the church, but yet will say that it wasn't till later in life, through a unique retreat experience called the Walk to Emmaus, that she responded to the gospel for the first time. And yet they knew, as good Southerners do, we need to raise our children in the church. So we went to church. My dad's journey, very interesting, raised in the Episcopalian faith. His grandfather, my great-great, was a missionary to Northern Louisiana from Oxford, England, back in the 1800s.
Wow.
Yeah, quite a journey there. And he went to an Episcopal boys' school run by monks. And he would say, oh, I knew the Lord, but I wasn't discipled in such a way that I was actively wanting to live it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, through the witness and testimony of a dear friend of our family, our director of children and youth ministry, Mary Grayson, began to take their walk more seriously. And I, at the age of 10, Vacation Bible School at the Methodist Church, was introduced to salvation's plan is in my hand. Mm-hmm. And I learned a Bible verse for every finger and confessed faith in him.
Salvation's plan is in my hand.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it. Every digit means something else and something particular and something very special.
Oh, well, the woman who shared that with me was Miss Carol Engle, crazy Miss Engle. She wasn't Mrs. Engle, but Miss Engle.
Mm-hmm.
She was a high school teacher full of energy. Kids loved her and still do. And she has a presentation where she has you make and mold chocolate clay, substance made of peanut butter, chocolate, and evaporated milk, while she tells you salvation's plan is in your hand. And gives out little postcards. And this past week at Salem Camp Meeting, Miss Engle is still doing the same song and dance, and children flock to her, Mike.
You know, some people just have that ability yes. to do what you're talking about. You know, she probably has dozens and dozens, yes. maybe hundreds
That's right.
of people that look back fondly as you.
When we get to heaven, yeah. there's going to be the Carol Engel section and I'll be in it.
Oh, that is wonderful. That is such a great, I believe, heritage point that we all need to have. And maybe some of us have some of those things if we just stop and think about it, the people that influenced us.
Well, and I, in our evangelism work, try to help folks understand. Some people have the testimony of the wild Mustang who is broken from the field and brought into the barn. And some people have a testimony where they were raised in the barn and they're both subject to the master. Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, I'm grateful that I never knew a time in my life without God's presence and love and grace. And yet there was for me a particular one moment where I did confess faith. And sometimes the Mustang testimonies are so exciting and more entertaining. They get lifted up in church more. And yet you got your horses that grew up in the stable that may doubt the validity of their walk and their journey. So I try to help folks realize both are biblical.
Both are biblical and both are just as equally dependent on the grace of God.
Amen.
You know, I think that I grew up in that kind of that name, that testimony season mm-hmm. in the 70s when people were coming to the Lord, the Jesus movement was yeah. really going on.
Steve Green. The artist, the musician.
Keith Green would be one of the guys. Music. Yeah. And he was in Lindale, Texas, and one of the guys that would be during that season right in here in Central Florida, Alex Clattenburg from Church in the Sun now.
Okay.
Back in that day, he was at Calvary Assembly, and they did this big Jesus Festival in the mid-70s. Thousands, tens of thousands of people came to there over the several years. There was this big revival going on, but during that time frame, an unfortunate thing was going on up in Indiana with the churches that we associated with, and it really did come down to almost name that testimony, and it was almost like seeing who could one up each other, you know. And well, I did this, and I did this, and there were actual people I knew that started doing vices just to be set free from them. It was so ridiculous, you know. Yeah. And I love the old story that talks about a Teen Challenge Center in New York that was having a name that testimony service, and a grandma stood up and started confessing all of the things that she'd been set free from, like murder and prostitution, and and all of the guys are giving high fives to each other. And then she stopped and she said, "And by God's grace, I was set free from all of those before I ever had to do a single one of them."
Oh, that's great.
It's a great story. Wow. And I think it's true that the greatest grace example is going to be those that have that needed the grace the most before they ever did any of those things.
Well, in relation to my story, I hesitate to share this because I am not perfect. I am a sinful man. But early faith enabled me to just make some wiser choices through my student years. Mm-hmm. And I'm very grateful that I don't have particular baggage that some might have. Thankfully it's never kind of turned into a spiritual hubris or pride, but, I'm so grateful for the men and women in my life in those middle school and high school years who taught me Jesus. Mary Grayson, that crazy youth director, along with Ms. Engel, they were a power couple. She allowed me to come to the high school Bible study at her home, and I fell in love with God's word. Mm-hmm. I would sit in the back on the floor and let the high schoolers do their thing and would have a pen in my Bible and soak up the richness and beauty. And it is a huge driver of my ministry today because I think biblical illiteracy is one of the greatest plagues on the church.
You know, you probably heard all the great Old Testament stories, you know, that are so rich.
And more than that, we dug into Paul's letters. We dug into the structure of parables. I mean, Mary didn't teach tulips.
Yeah.
She taught substance, and it planted seeds in me that still grow.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful thing to have that again as a foundation. And what has happened in your life, it's only been building on that foundation.
Sure.
And you look back and you realize, man, that made a major difference in my life because of that person's investment.
That's right.
And I love that old song called Thank You when we get to heaven and people will be coming up and you're right. They'll be doing
Ray Bolts. Wasn't that Ray Bolts?
It was. Mm. It was a great song. And yeah, and this is going to be going on. Thank God for it. You know, you've had to have some point, though, where you knew that ministry was going to be a direction that you went. Tell us about that.
Well, unfortunately, we had had 4 pastors in a row at my Methodist church who were not admirable or worthy of emulating. Mm. And
that is a sad thing.
Well, and Mary finally moved to a Presbyterian church. Our family followed her, and there I, for the first time, got to know an incredible godly man who was in it for all the right reasons. Mm-hmm. And I grew in my own skills and participation in ministry as a student, I get into college, and I certainly see the gifts for ministry. It's a natural thing that seems to fit. But I'd had so many bad role models. I said, God, if you want me to do this, I need you to knock me over the head because I'm too afraid that I would want to do it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
I've seen the pastors that do it for ego or for power or certainly not money. And I just don't know if I could or should, I mean, would avoid all that.
Or that you could produce anything different than that. That's a real possibility for a lot of people. They don't realize how much their environment actually shapes actions.
That's right. We think we have free will. Mm-hmm. Good Calvinist idea that we think we have it. But it was actually just before my sophomore year in college. I am at camp meeting, Old Southern Revival up in Georgia with a tabernacle, which is an outdoor pavilion for worship 3 times a day. And had a mystical experience one evening where I literally felt the hands of God on my shoulder so much that I turned around to see who was touching me. Nobody. I felt a warmth start at the top of my head and go down my spine. And I happened to be standing next to Mary Grayson. And it was such a powerful evening because leading up to that, the pastor had said at the closing hymn, if anybody wants to come down to dedicate their life or rededicate their life to Christ, now is the time. And on this last evening of camp meeting, just before going back to college, he threw in a third option. And he said, if you feel God's calling you into full-time Christian ministry.
Wow.
So I was overwhelmed. I decided not to go down at that moment because my whole home congregation was sitting there. But it was in my seat that I had that anointing of sorts. Mm-hmm. And afterwards I said, Mary.
You just encountered God, man.
It was powerful.
Yeah.
It was overwhelming. I said, Mary, we need to talk.
That's great. We're going to pick this story up in a moment. My guest today is Dr. Case Thorpe from the First Presbyterian Church in Orlando. We'll be back with Dr. Thorpe in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Listen, we all know in business nowadays, one of the hardest things to get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, right? Trying to get content, good content at that, always struggling with your phone, never understanding the settings, and then when you finally post the picture or video, it looks terrible. Well, I'm about to let you in on a little secret in how to make this problem simply go away. I'm talking about Boundless Drone Services. Let me tell you, Boundless Drone Services takes away all the stress. Brian and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Or maybe you'd like to do what we did at Mark Radio and have them highlight the wonderful team that you have working for you. At Boundless Drone Services, they really can do it all. Contact them today at 407-601-2438 or go directly to their website at boundlessdroneservices.com to see how they can help you take your business to the next level in marketing.
Dr. Case Thorpe is my guest today in the studio, and we're sitting here during the break talking about that name and the fact that I'd never heard anybody use Case as their first name before, but it's short for Casey.
Casey, I'm really Charles III, and my mom was not thrilled to be forced to take the family name. Charlie and Chuck were taken, and she said, well, fine, I'm calling him Casey, even if his birth certificate says something else.
Yeah, so you're really a Charles.
That's right.
And now you have a son.
I do.
That is Charles IV.
Charles is the apple of my eye, 15, good looking, loves Jesus. He is at running camp up in North Carolina, runs varsity, cross country, does lacrosse. And his older sister is gorgeous and godly. Alexandra is going into her junior year and so talented in many ways. And then I have little Eddie Haskell, if you will. You know Eddie Haskell.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Brooks is 9 going on 10 going on 25. And he is a rounder, so I'm going to have to keep an eye on him.
My Mrs. Cleaver, you look very nice today.
Yes, yes. Well, Brooks has gotten lately, okay, this is funny, to calling me Casey.
Oh, really?
Right. So, you know, we like respect in our home, and it's dad and mom, but lately he's been going, all right, Casey. And I'm like, okay now.
Oh, man.
Let's have a talk.
Yeah, it sounds like it's time for a serious chat here. That's right. Oh, you know, we're going back and we're talking about those things you described your encounter with God that night when we were discussing this at the end of segment one as a mystical experience. Mm-hmm. And basically by just saying that it's not easily explained what happens when one encounters in a tangible way, in a personal way, and maybe even in a physical way, as you felt that his hands were actually on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I've had numerous occasions like that in my life. Powerful. And it is really an unforgettable experience when you encounter the living God.
And when I have been at moments of doubting my call, when I've been tired, when I've been frustrated, it's the memory of that moment that helps a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I thought at the time God was calling me to ministry, not necessarily pastoral ministry. And I thought at the time, who would want to be a pastor? Oh my goodness. Like boring. What do you do all day but read books and meet with people to pray? Like I just didn't have a full concept, but I did think it was the academic ministry and that I would want to get a PhD and perhaps teach.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another mystical experience 5-6 years down the road from that first moment when in my dorm room in seminary, I was on my knees. Frustrated that my grades were okay, but professors weren't asking me to go to conferences and write more papers. Every time I showed up at my internship churches, I loved it. I mean, God just showed up and my gifts flourished. And I had had the door shut for several language programs over the summer. You got to have your French and German if you're going to do a PhD, and the door kept closing. So in this night of fitful prayer, I was so crying out to God, and I heard him say, I need you to be a good steward of the gifts I've given you. And I thought to myself, well, what gifts have you given me? Teaching, preaching, administration, hospitality. Like, those are gifts for the church. And we have wonderful people who are gifted for the academy. And at that point, I turned my direction towards pastoral ministry.
Yeah. Romans 12.
And here I am.
There you are. I mean, there's so many gifts that you've been given. And I think, you know, the term strikes me, equipping evangelist. That's kind of a term I heard years ago when we think about the call that we have to share the gospel, but to be one that uses teaching as you do, that really you've been given a charge to kind of lead the whole church in this area. Mm-hmm. But more than that, it's not like you're just doing it for the whole church. You're instructing others on how to do that.
Well, certainly my teaching ministry is one of the strongest in what I do for the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's been interesting for me to watch the way in which seminaries are evolving and churches are evolving as always. And it's as if the seminaries are trying to reach down into an audience of your top 10 to 20% of your disciples at your church who are hungry and ready for such higher level training. But also then you've got in your church, everybody from non-believer to 30-year walking with the Lord knows the Bible. And you've got folks who are past your Sunday school or your small group or what you normally have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gap is being bridged. And I've gotten to have some fun with a number of different programs to teach in that space. And, the Lord knows what he's doing.
You know, when a person like yourself has that kind of an experience from God, it does become in your life one of those moments of demarcation. You can look back, and you mentioned this earlier, like when you're discouraged, you look back and you remember, and God is gentle. He's so kind in reminding us of the things that he's called us to do, not to doubt. And that's why I believe in the Old Testament, they would build memorials, you know, to whenever they walk by. That's right. Raise an Ebenezer. You walk by, you see it, you remember it, and it causes one to reflect on the grace and the mercy of God at that point in your life.
So I turned 45 2 weeks ago, and I wonder, okay, do I make it to 90? Is it the halfway point? And then Sunday, I had lunch with a young man after worship who has been attending our church for about 6 months. 21, working at Publix, going to UCF, in love with a girl, but she doesn't know it. We had the most interesting conversation, and I took away this understanding where at that stage of life, you are waiting for those Ebenezers. You are being forced to walk by faith because you have no idea what your future is going to hold. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good thing to learn to let the light, the word be a light unto my path. It only gives me the light for the next step, not the whole way forward. Mm-hmm. And so you have to learn to walk in faith.
Even though we want to see the whole way
forward. Oh my goodness, don't we? Don't we?
Yeah. There's so many times that I say that, and then there have been times that I see a few steps forward and it scares me to death, and I'm able to say, you know, it's probably a good thing that I don't and can't see that far into the future. God knows, and we'll have grace for that when that time comes.
But you got to experience it some before you can do it more readily. Mm-hmm. You would agree?
I would agree. Yeah. I would agree. And that's something that God's called you to do. Now, in addition to this evangelism stuff that you get to do and teach, you're also the leader of this thing called the Collaborative. Tell us about that. Mm. I've heard about it.
Well, it has been so much fun the last 7 years or so. We put a great deal of investment in this ministry that seeks to connect the dots between one's faith and their work. And it's not your typical marketplace type ministry. The marketplace ministries of the 80s, 90s, and still today are so essential for evangelism and ethics, how you bring your colleagues to faith and how you do good work that's godly. But this is sort of a next generation type approach that we modeled after Redeemer Presbyterian Church with Tim Keller in New York City.
Yes.
That looks at cultural renewal. How do the major institutions of town, the major industry sectors, and then the particular companies, and then you in that particular company, how does the common good get blessed through Christ followers leading hard and leading well in their particular companies? And so I think that I can point to 10 different people in seats of great authority in our city today, CEOs, attorneys, political office, who are godly people and are knocking it out. But I don't know that anybody in 1985 or 1995 thought to themselves, okay, as our culture secularizes, are we making sure there are Christ followers in these important seats? Now, I'm not advocating theocracy. I'm not advocating that Christ followers get in seats of power to lord it over others. But I do think the church needs to be thinking strategically that we have well-trained people in culture, in institutions, in the public square, so that we don't just abandon the major positions of leadership in our community to those that don't know the Lord.
I think, don't you think, that there's a lot of people who do abandon those positions out of just kind of being intimidated. I mean, they look at all that's going on in the world today, and it's just downright scary, and it seems like not a place that a believer would be comfortable.
Well, like you
and
said,
yet we've got to be there.
Well, like you said, you are formed so much in the environment in which you are. And so I've seen business professionals or artists or educators do one of two things. Either say, I have to give up some of my Christian ethic if I'm going to make it. I've got to cut corners. I've got to knock out other people and those sorts of things. But then on the other hand, it's also you get into environments in which it's like the frog in the frying pan. Mm-hmm. And you don't realize how far you may have gotten from scriptural warrants, and all of a sudden you've got great authority and potential. But then I also think the need for the collaborative is because the church hasn't naturally discipled folks to understand God's mission to the world. And therefore, there is a role and a place for us to lead institutions in helping bring about the common good.
Yeah, and the scripture that comes to my mind is Jesus said that we should be the salt. And that part of what salt does, it mm-hmm. creates, it's the flavor, it's mm-hmm. it's the preservant. And there needs to be people in roles where that can be an impact upon our culture.
But to be in that role, they also have to have this grander vision. What is the greater narrative? What is the worldview that we recognize God needs us to do such things? So much of American discipleship is about me and Jesus. Mm-hmm. My sin, my prayer life, my telling the good news to a neighbor, me serving the poor. We rarely get beyond me to the us and to the community kind of level. Hmm. And so while a lot of global missions is going into a context and starting from the bottom and going up, meaning you go into a foreign country and you start serving the poor, maybe it's an orphanage, and then you build a school, and then you kind of build
dig
up
a well.
From there.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. The collaborative approach is to go from the top down. Let's go look at that top 1%, 2%, 5% of leadership and really make sure that they are well-discipled and the potential they have to have an influence for the common good and see it unfold.
Hmm. How does this group function there at First Press? Hmm.
Well, the collaborative isn't so much a specific fellowship, but we do have a number of programs and offerings that help to nurture this conversation. Mm-hmm. So the Gotham Fellowship is our leadership seminar. It's a 9-month graduate level experience. We teach the theology of cultural renewal.
Why the name Gotham?
Well, it originated in New York City.
Okay.
And I kept the name here. We were allowed to change it, but it sparks curiosity.
Yeah, I thought maybe you're Batman and I just didn't know it.
I do wear a Batman uniform on the first day that we gather.
Do you really?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. I'm a sucker. Okay.
We take 12 folks from various industries, Christ Center professionals, and we do a deep dive. Read 75 to 100 pages a week of the classics to the Reformation theologians to modern day authors like N.T. Wright, Tim Keller. But we also do 51%, even more, on spiritual formation. Because too much of Christian discipleship has become intellect and information to pour in up here in our brains. And I always tell my folks at the church, look at all these holes in my head. I got two nostrils, I got two ears, two eyes, a mouth. I mean, it just leaks, right?
Yeah,
if
right.
If you put it in your head. Do you remember your sophomore year biology class?
No.
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 But when you form the heart, I'm from Georgia, and I think about that red Georgia clay, and it's so firm and hard. And when you form it and mold it, Mike, it lasts for decades. Mm-hmm. And so we spend as much or more time learning 9 different spiritual formation prayer techniques so that when you're in the midst of your day-to-day work and life, where's the Lord in this?
Yeah.
God, bring me back to you in this moment, and what do I need to do?
Oh, it's a beautiful thing. And you know what you're talking about again is really building in an ability to stand up to the flow of the life.
That's right.
Of culture, because this culture will wear you down.
And it's as much about who and how we are, our being, our living in these streams, as much as it is the right knowledge, the right doctrine, etc.
It's a beautiful thing.
Another thing we do is called the Orlando Fellows, and it is for recent college graduates. They live with us for 9 months. They have a host family in the church with whom they live. We help them get a job Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to get some experience in the workplace. And then I get them on Thursdays. I teach them a course for which they get credit through Reformed Theological Seminary. And we look at the biblical narrative, that biblical illiteracy thing, Mike, that drives me nuts. We look at faith, work, and economics. And then over the year, they do a mission trip, some retreats, great experiences. And our aim is after 9 months to send them off to either graduate school or their own careers with a faith, work, and economics deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
So that they will hopefully go on to be culture makers.
Yeah, Sounds like a great idea. It's called The Collaborative. How can people find out about that?
CollaborativeOrlando.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And we do offer a blog subscription. And every 2 weeks, we will drop in your box a long form article that looks at the faith, work, integration, and cultural renewal.
Now, yeah, I've got to say something to you. You're the least boring PhD that I can imagine.
Well, I don't have a PhD. I have a doctorate.
Doctorate.
Of
I'm
ministry.
Sorry, a doctorate. Yeah. Right.
But hey, I'd love one.
But you are a doctor, and that's what I'm really addressing here, because of the fact you have had this thing that you didn't want to be that because you thought it was boring, and yet I look at you now, and there's so much life and so much love for God, and you want to see that passed to young people, which is what we're going to be talking about in the next segment. Mm. Because I think that today, you know, more than any time that I've ever seen in my lifetime, we've got a culture right now that's hurting. Mm. And if there was ever a culture that needed the gospel, boy, it's this one right now.
Amen.
In our own country. We see things in America right now that look un-American.
Yeah. And new sexualities, gender understandings, new people group formations that are contrary to American democracy, much less the definition of a human.
Right.
We've got big challenges.
Big challenges are ahead, but we've got a bigger God to help us meet those challenges. And that's what I want to hear about. I'm talking today to Dr. Case Thorpe from First Presbyterian Orlando. We'll be back with him in just a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd. Hey, we all know in business that one of the hardest things to really get right is your social media advertising. We all struggle with this, but I'm here to tell you a little secret that will make the problem simply go away. Boundless Drone Services. They take away all the stress. Brian Fay and his team are ready to help you create awesome video content of your next corporate event, training, or educational video. Boundless Drone Services. Contact them today. BoundlessDroneServices.com. In the studio with me, my guest today, Dr. Case Thorpe from First Pres Orlando. And, you know, this whole thing that you talked about in segment one, I wanted to circle back around because it is a real issue in this day and age in which we live today. You talked about how that you felt like early on in your life, you were a cultural Christian. Mm. You know, That intrigued me when you said that, because I think there's a lot of people that are that when they don't know they are that.
Yeah.
They have got a whole lot more of the culture in them than they realize, maybe way too much than what they should have. Yeah. We know that in one sense, we're all in the world, but we're called by God to not be of the world.
Yeah.
And so now we're living in a day and age where so many of our own kids, and I say that not meaning me personally, but I'm talking about as a group, as a church, a church in large, that the children of today are really having to face this issue about the culture and its impact on their lives.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big ticket item today.
Well, it is. And I realize in hearing you share that the term cultural Christian, I think, made more sense in the 80s than maybe right now. The statistics are so clear that the number of professing Christians, much less churchgoers, is drastically falling. And in the South in the 80s, there was an expectation you were a member of a church somewhere. We were in a small community outside of Atlanta that became a suburb. And that isn't so much the case in a lot of places, still in some. So I don't know that a young person today might really recognize, oh, you mean everybody around me was supposed to kind of be at a church somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
I have a good friend, Tom Muir, who's doing a church plant that we support in the suburbs of Edinburgh, Scotland. Esk Valley Community Church. It's a Free Church of Scotland church. And in Scotland, less than 2% of the population even go to church. And that includes Roman Catholics. So you could just imagine the numbers for Protestants. And there, which I believe, sadly, we will resemble probably one day, secularization is such the norm. that if you're a Christian, you're different. You're weird.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I circle back. How are we in our churches discipling our folks to be different? Because we used to be the center of culture. We had the power. We were founded as a Christian country.
Mm-hmm.
We have had evangelical presidents. And yet, if so much of that history may not be in front of us, are we preparing our people? And this is one of the emphases in the collaborative, in their exilic discipleship, to say, what does it mean to be a disciple living in Babylon rather than living in Jerusalem?
Mm-hmm.
Or even in Rome, in the Roman Catholic European era where it was power, what does it mean to be a Christian in Babylon?
You know, we think if we go all the way back to Daniel and the story of them rejecting the king's food and living in that culture when that was offered to them.
That's right.
And it was, they were immersed in it, but they chose a different path.
Well, Robert Wolgemuth, an author and book agent, he was the chair of my search committee, good friend. He will often say that when he had young children and something would come up that they wanted to do, he said, we just kind of shrugged and went, well, we're different. And it kept something from becoming a larger family argument, but it was also early on helping their kids to know following Christ means that we will not look like the rest of culture and it's okay. And, I know that we have at First Presbyterian really tried to shift in a direction of exilic discipleship so that our people are prepared.
Now, explain that term for those that would not understand that term.
Exilic. So that what was it like living in exile?
Mm-hmm.
So much of the American experience through the 1800s, the great revivals in the 50s with that sometimes not so true image of 2.4 children in a white picket fence and a mom and a dad.
The American dream.
That's right, where everybody went to church. So much of American church was at the center of society. You know, David Swanson today can get Buddy Dyer on the phone if he needs to. And likewise, vice versa. But in a lot of places in our country, California, you can't just, you don't know each other. You don't get on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And even if the pastor did make a call, may not get it returned. So we are moving more and more into a post-Christian society where the church isn't at the center.
Mm-hmm.
And yet a lot of our Sunday school, Bible study, preaching assumes some of the old days, some of the days when we were the ones calling the shots. And so I think exilic discipleship is much more helping us to understand we're minorities. We're going to receive persecution. We need to be a little sharper on some of our fundamentals on our biblical literacy. We need to be a little sharper on how is it that we interact with non-believers, even members of other religions, in a way that's hospitable and loving and warm. That's not something that I've seen modeled so well in a lot of churches.
You know, 25 years ago, I was in an RTS course on postmodernism,
mm-hmm.
and we were studying Vieth's book. And in there, I think the book was titled Postmodern Times, I believe was the name of it.
That's right.
And how that it was going to be a time coming when people were not only rejecting the values that, you know, I think a lot of 60s and maybe even late 50-year-old people are still shocked and surprised by some of the things that are going on when we really shouldn't be, because this has been winding up for a long time. It's been a long time coming where now people are not just looking and rejecting the very values that we hold near and dear, they become a threat.
That's right, a threat.
They are a threat to them, and that's why they're an all-out war against those values.
Now, take our church, Christian, biblical values and identity, and let's put that on the table for a minute. Let's think about our American sense of self and what our rights are all about and what the Constitution stands for. Well, now we're seeing on the far left and the extreme progressive agenda that there's a rejection of even enlightenment principles,
mm-hmm.
a rejection of what is a human, of where does one's sense of self reside? How is it that ideas are supposed to float freely versus be canceled because they're a threat to their agenda? How is it that, no, we don't believe in freedom of assembly because your assembly stands for things that we don't agree with? So I believe our political conversation is going to be grappling with some of these even anti-Enlightenment perspectives.
Right. Post-human almost.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, really, when you get right down to it, as one person said, when marriage can be between a person and anything, is it not just a prophetic statement to say we're going to see that day come to pass when people are going to be married to anything?
And so in the meantime, how does the church preach the gospel, teach the scriptures, prepare our children to be different?
Yep. And that's the question. And that's not only the question, that's the challenge.
Mm. And we try at the Collaborative to help even our C-suite folks and our up-and-coming millennials who will be the leaders tomorrow to strike that balance between professional excellence, no doubt, but yet standing firm for Christ. And one particular concept we look at is called principled pluralism. How can I have very clear principles? I'm not going to back off my Christian convictions, and yet understand it's a pluralistic world in society.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need to whitewash or hide my principles, but I need to approach them and present them in a unique way, because I'm in a world in which there's a lot of different principles sitting around a table.
So Gen Zers, when they hear you talk, when they hear things from the church today, what do you think it is that they need the most to help them interpret the Word of God the way they need to?
I think they need the biblical narrative. The biblical narrative. Even seminary presidents will say, the church sends us young men and women to be trained for ministry, and they don't know the story.
Mm.
So
are they hearing the argument before they hear the story?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They tackle theological doctrines, but they don't know the story.
Mm-hmm.
So these Gen Zers I am coming across in our Orlando Fellows program, and I have to admit, Mike, like a lot of my jokes and cultural references, they don't get it. They don't get it. And I have to clarify.
Yeah.
But what saddens me most, it saddens me the biblical illiteracy, but then I say to them, I am giving you one of the greatest gifts of your life. The chance to go through the Bible from cover to cover. And that's hard, and it's not often that it happens. But you've got the next 9 months. Please keep up with the reading.
Yeah.
We're going to have a blast. And I'm giving you a gift.
Yep. They just don't realize it.
No. No.
You know, because it is a gift. I'm going through that cover to cover myself right now. And it's such a fun thing to read left to right.
Well, and I have to confess,
front to back.
When I got to Princeton Seminary, I have to confess, I had a great church upbringing. I, in fourth grade, memorized all 66 books first and got the ribbon. Mr. and Ms. Hughes, faithful Sunday school teachers. I had Ms. Engel and Mary in great youth ministry. I got to seminary and for the first time, put the whole thing together.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I should have had more foundation than this. I had great ethics and morals it taught to me. But we got to get back to the substance. We can't assume the culture is going to convey it. There's no more Ten Commandments or Ben-Hur.
Yep. And, you know, there's not ever intended to be a greater substitute than the Word of God itself. Mm.
It's
because
enough.
It is life to those that find it,
yep,
and health to their flesh.
When I teach my classes and wherever I am, I always start with, in this book, holding up the Bible, is every big answer to every big question in life.
Wow. It is as simple as that. And that's really a great answer. I mean, you've given us really that the one thing, the pearl of great price, mm-hmm, that if we could see it, that the answer is there. And I think that's such a refreshing, simplistic sounding, but very real answer, that the answer is going to be in the narrative of the Bible.
And likewise, I always try to say to whatever audience I'm in front of, look, it's complicated. It's confusing. If it were to be written today, it would be organized so much more differently. So don't be afraid. There are no dumb questions. Mm-hmm. Lean on the tools. Call me. Ask me. Lean on your pastor. Because it is not an easy text to necessarily access. However, there are so many resources to help in that regard. And God will not fail to deliver.
He is a faithful God, and he's given us his word, and his word will stand forever. I really enjoyed chatting with you today. How can people get in touch with you?
FPCO.org for First Pres Church Orlando.org. Our phone and emails on there. Come see us. Our worship times, August 15th, change to 9 and 11:15. Mm-hmm. And we've remodeled our sanctuary.
I saw the pictures David posted.
Yeah, we're getting some good post-COVID energy, and yeah, life is good.
Yeah, the inside of that building must be fantastic.
Well, we're very blessed, and it's faithful men and women from 1876 that enable us to be in a very expensive but important place.
Mm-hmm.
We don't take lightly our place in the midst of the government and business and arts community.
Dr. Case Thorpe from First Pres Orlando, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Mike.
It's been a great time. And friends, we'll look forward to having you with us the next time, right here on Afternoons with Mike.